side of the pond, he is a quarantined DJ Switzer. I am quarantined Jeremy Lance. Every day is Groundhog's Day.
It really is. It really is. I feel like I'm saying the same things. Saying it's probably wrong. I'm yelling the same things at my children every single day.
Yep.
I'm going through the same routine. I'm eating the same things most mornings, most days. I know you're doing this on a regular basis. You're cracking a beer midday and then having some nightcap drinks every night. So our alcohol consumption is up.
Do you find yourself feeling like kind of looking at the clock like, probably still a little too early for beer number one? 3 o'clock, let's do it.
I don't know. I'm pretty well conditioned at this point from, you know, early morning pub drinking, you know, watching games. So I'm not afraid of cracking one open before noon, although I'll be honest, I've only done that once so far. Because I feel like I want to save all my drinks for night to try to deal with the sadness of being stuck in my home every evening.
Yeah, you're trying to stretch out what you got going on in the day. Like, let's see how many hours I can fill. And you don't want to burn all the cool things off in the morning.
No, that's for real. I don't want to drink through my supply, like, within a couple of days of this whole thing starting.
Yeah, that's very true. That's where things get dicey. What else are you doing? Like, how have you been keeping yourself occupied outside of just wrangling children and being a dad?
Well, I mean, it's dadding at this point. I don't feel like I've done a ton of other things aside from that. But there have been a lot of things to kind of keep me busy, too. Playing loads of games on my phone. My wife discovered a free Roller Coaster Tycoon app. On the phone, right?
Love so that game as a kid.
We've both been going at that a little bit. I also, you know, excitingly and big news on the Added Time Outfitters front, we're launching our new MLS line inspired wristbands actually tomorrow. Right. So we're recording on Monday night. We're going to be launching those tomorrow. So we'll have 5 brand new designs that will be launching up. So that's kept me busy taking photos, working on artwork, working on the social campaigns for those, getting that all lined up. So that's kept me really busy from a, you know, just pure work standpoint. But also, like, there's just like loads of, I don't know, challenges that people have been throwing up online. And normally I'd be like, I'm not going to touch this. I don't have the time in my life to try to squeeze this in. And now that we all have ample amounts of time, when someone's like, hey, hashtag kits out challenge, and I'm throwing you into the equation, DJ, I'm like, you know what I will do? I will go find every kit I own.
I did that this afternoon. I posted mine.
And fold it up in a nice pattern, set it out on the floor.
How many times did you redo your pattern once you had it out?
I actually drew it out on a piece of paper and then
smart.
Yeah, well, I mean, I do creative work for a living, so it's not that unlike me to sketch things out before I actually do them anyway. But I don't know. I mean, I saw you did the Kits Out Challenge, which was fun.
Yeah.
You then roped me into the, like, 4 players that mean a lot to me one, right? Where you kind of list a few of those out. And then there was the toilet paper challenge too, which is really hard to do during the day when your kids have all their shit spread everywhere in your house. So I had to wait for everyone to go to bed.
Just running in your path as you're trying to do it.
Yeah. Right. So, I was just happy to get at least 10 touches in, and look semi-competent while doing that. So I've been doing those kind of things for the time being. What have you been up to?
I've been fishing. I know that's totally on brand for this podcast, but it's something I was actually planning on starting again. It was something I did as a kid, spending summers at my grandparents' lake houses in Minnesota. And it was something I wanted to get going again this year. So, like, over the winter, I had, like, bought up all this gear. And so I'd been, like, just chomping at the bit to get out and do it. And I was actually thinking to myself, like, heading into March, like, oh, March is just going to be so busy with work for me because all my leagues are starting that, like, I'm it'll probably be like mid-April before I finally get out and fish. Silver lining of not having leagues to run at the moment, I've been fishing most mornings.
Get any big ones on the line yet?
I caught a tree. Like, there was a tree submerged in the water and I pulled it out. That was pretty good. It's actually a little early to be fishing in the Midwest. So there's just not a whole lot of fish moving around. It's what's considered like pre spawn. Mm-hmm. So like it's before all the fish start just dropping baby fish all over the joint. So they're kind of all hunkered down in their like kind of beds and they don't really get out much. So it's been utterly impossible to actually catch anything, but it's just getting in a car and driving somewhere and like just having somewhere to be during the day. That's not your house and your couch. It's literally the normal thing of like getting in a car and driving that. It's like, I need to do this. I need to just do that part.
Just to change your space. It's a little bit.
It's just about being able to do something.
Well, I'm glad you're able to get out. But you're right. That's not very on brand for the soccer podcast. I'll tell you what I'm really excited about, and mostly because I have your Netflix username and password. Is there some really cool soccer stuff that's about to
hit
waves again? And I'm really looking forward to sinking my teeth into those and kind of binging on any sort of soccer content at this point that's new to my eyeballs, because I've watched replays way too many times. I've watched a bunch of, you know, everyone's sharing all sorts of old, like, hey, I remember this awesome pass, or remember this awesome goal. You remember the, 2016 December goals of the month candidates in the Premier League? Like, those were all crazy. Like, that's
I did love that on, what was that, Saturday morning, where NBCSN just ran just back-to-back-to-back episodes for like 5 or 6 hours of goals of the season.
Yeah.
Just 6 hours of goals of the season. That was actually fun. I went ahead and like DVR'd all of them, cause I was like, I'm going to need something here. There's going to be a day where I'm going to have nothing. I can at least get my little soccer fix that way.
Yeah. It's like the old days where you used to buy like 101 great goals, or like all the goals from the, 1990 World Cup. Those are the things that I grew up watching, because we were so soccer starved here in the U.S. for any sort of soccer content. It's not like it was on TV very often. So it has been fun kind of running down nostalgia lane on those types of things. But Netflix is about to do a double whammy. They already dropped this week their brand new show, which is, if you're into soccer nostalgia, this is probably right up your alley. But they have this new show called The English Game. Which, from the creators of Downton Abbey, and
you had me at Downton Abbey.
Yeah, not my cup of tea, but I know a few of our listeners are into that. But it's tracing the origins of 19th century soccer, so it's a period piece, and you're kind of seeing all the class warfare aspects of it.
And, yeah, I watched the first episode so far, pretty good. It's basically kind of about the kind of coming together of just kind of organized soccer, because there was just kind of a lot of groups kind of doing their own thing. And even within that, like their own rules and style of how the game was interpreted and played back then. So it was kind of just how all of that came together to be the modern game and the modern system, for the most part, in England that we know now.
Yeah. So I'm glad to hear you started it and you've not advised me not to watch it so far. So I'll be logging into your account to watch that probably tonight.
Yeah, it's good. I heard it did get pretty mixed reviews over in the UK, but I'm one episode in. It's good. The bar is super low right now as far as like keeping my attention and giving me something I want to watch. So for a show that may not ultimately be that great, it came at a really good time when our expectations are not great. So
yeah, anything that's new, we'll watch at this point. And then April 1st, you know, before the end of this week, the second season of Sunderland Till I Die will be dropping on Netflix. And I mean, if you missed out on the first season, you tuned me into this. I binge watched it all right after my knee surgery last December. And it was truly like one of the most engrossing shows that I've ever watched. Like I very rarely am like, I need to watch like 8 episodes in a row of anything. And that show definitely had me hooked. And I literally cannot wait to watch the second season of it.
Now, do you have Amazon Prime?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. There's the Leeds United documentary. Have you watched that yet?
I think I
showed you one time when you were over, I showed you like a little clip of it. The lead, yeah, I think it's called, oh crap, Take Me Home or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Leeds United, I think it covered the, I want to say the 18 to 19. I want to say it was probably like the 17 to 18 season.
Okay.
Or maybe it was 18 to 19. I guess it was, yeah, the previous season. Because there's actually a whole bit where they actually were attempting to sign Daniel James, and the dude is literally sitting in a conference room at Leeds all day waiting for things to be finalized on transfer deadline day, and it never got finalized, so he had to walk his sorry butt back to Swansea. But it's like an unreal thing to see. Like, you see this kid that we now know, you know, as this player for United, like literally just sitting around at Leeds United waiting so he can officially sign. He had already taken a picture with the jersey and everything. They got all of that. But they're waiting on some like last like few hoops to be jumped through and, you know, I's to be dotted, and it never happened. And then like he just literally had to just take his backpack and leave.
Well, I mean,
head back to Swansea.
It worked out for him in the long run, obviously.
Yeah. Much better move came to him in the summer. But yeah, no, definitely check that one out. That one's really good. I'm super excited for Sunderland Till I Die. I watched the trailer for the new season yesterday, and my favorite former Wycombe Wanderers player, Luke O'Nine, who now plays for Sunderland, was all over the promo. So I was like super excited to see him in that. So, and they're gonna play. I mean, there's obviously episodes where they like play Wycombe because they're in the same league now.
So
that'll be cool. So a little added bonus to it, but yeah, super great series. So excited to see that. Also, I don't know if you noticed on YouTube, on like the official FIFA channel, they have been dropping those like one hour, you know how they make like the official movie of the World Cup?
Yeah.
And it's like that 1 hour special. So they're like dropping those right now.
Ooh.
Onto the YouTube channel. So the 2018 one just came out. I actually sat there and watched that today. And then they're even doing like big matches. They're doing like full replays on their channel of like big World Cup matches.
Sounds like I've got a bunch of stuff to watch now.
Yeah. So there's stuff there. You got to, you got to search for it, but we'll get through this.
Yeah, we will get through this. The world of soccer, while it's mostly ground to a halt thanks to COVID-19, there has been like bits and pieces of news that have kind of slid out.
Stuff is still happening.
Yeah, there are things that are happening. I think the biggest thing, at least in American soccer, that's kind of unfolded over the last week or so actually happened today. That was U.S. soccer finally naming a new CEO to replace the outgoing Dan Flynn. And they landed on the executive VP of Wasserman Sports Agency, Will Wilson. He's formerly the manager of some Soccer United Marketing, the kind of marketing arm that handles all of U.S. soccer and all of Major League Soccer and all of Mexico, at least in the U.S.'s distribution and marketing rights. He handled all their international business relationships. And it's really kind of, you know, an extremely needed position. It's probably the most important day-to-day position within U.S. soccer. But it's really ruffled feathers, as pretty much everything that U.S. soccer does these days does. simply because of that some relationship and how it has a lot of the skeptics who kind of are struggling with everything that the USSF is doing right now. They're kind of saying like, oh, great, it's another some connected, another NFL connected guy who's been brought into the equation. And all of the people who love U.S. soccer but actually hate it deep down are having a field day with being like, here we go again. Like, it's another insider that's getting brought into the equation.
Yeah, I did see a lot of that. But there was a lot of, oh, you know, this guy's just one of the some USSF cronies. He's just going to be doing the same thing. Nothing's going to change. Nothing new here. Maybe. I don't know. You just kind of hope that that's not going to be the case, but I don't know. We'll see. Well,
I think the thing that I find frustrating about the immediate reaction to all this, and I'm not saying that people aren't right to point these things out, and I think they are, but it's also like, who you have to hire qualified people to be able to do this.
Right.
And like it or not, people who've been involved in the sport here domestically are good candidates for jobs simply because of their experience working within the sport. And furthermore, being an agent, having worked in Europe, having, you know, soccer connections already, those are valuable things. And I do really wonder, like, who would they have to hire into a really important position like that to appease all of these really harsh critics of the federation? And again, I'm not necessarily saying like you guys aren't right to question these things, but it's also like who are the
who would be that qualified person?
Yeah. So I think that's certainly something that we're all going to keep an eye on and see what type of job they do, especially given all of the tumultuous things that are going on within USSF at the moment. Obviously, the men's program has been in big disarray for a while. And then there's this ongoing equal pay lawsuit that they're dealing with the women's national team, which really has been a bit of a lightning rod for the organization. And it's not like the only lawsuit they're dealing with, right? They're also dealing with the U.S. Soccer Foundation, who's countersuing them over their logo usage. And it's just it's a really tumultuous time and a really chaotic time. And all I'm really hoping is that Will can get into this position and steady the ship a little bit.
Yeah. No, you hope so. And you're right. Like, and the women's thing is, you mentioned that, like, that's being fought now on two fronts, right? Because you're not only fighting the fact that you actually are still going through these proceedings, but you now, from a PR standpoint and a saving face standpoint, have to fight the way that those proceedings had been handled up until this point by USSF.
Yeah. It's just, it's a difficult thing. And I think USSF has certainly crapped the bed, like on multiple occasions, particularly on that front. And, you know, damage control is probably the best way of explaining it, but also just trying to get this thing back on the tracks is not going to be an easy task, you know, regardless of the type of, you know, lawsuits that they're currently facing down. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see what happens there. But, hey, they filled a position that needed to be filled. It took them a long time. Dan Flynn said he was leaving a long time ago. And, you know, they finally had that position filled up. And, you know, all we can do at this point is just hope for the best.
I guess what the other big news is, it does appear almost certain now that the Olympics will not happen this year. So women's qualification had wrapped up, at least, you know, the U.S. women are qualified. That was really a formality anyways. But like on the men's side of things, qualifications hadn't started, I don't believe.
No, it was about to start. They had just named the final roster for qualifying in CONCACAF. There are a couple areas around the world that we've already seen qualification wrapped up. Olympic qualifying is weird. It doesn't necessarily always work the way that like World Cup qualifications work, even at the youth levels. But, you know, with all the delays, it was going to be really difficult for teams to actually finish qualifying for the Olympics that were supposed to be starting in June and July. And now it appears that's not going to be something that needs to unfold, at least in the immediate future, as everyone tries to accommodate this disease. It's just ravaging the planet. But I think we would both agree now that the U.S. Olympic Committee, the Canadian Olympic Committee, Germany's Olympic Committee, all of these big influential national programs have all kind of come out and been like, hey, International Olympic Committee, we should not all be flying from around the world with various infection points and bringing all these athletes and spectators together, and let's actually delay this thing. And there are loads of legal ramifications that are wrapped up in this. Things like, you know, the Olympic Village where all the athletes live during the Olympics, all that gets turned into apartments after this is all done. And those have mostly already been sold. And like, how do those people move in? And then there's also loads of contractual obligations along the lines of, you know, the billions of TV dollars already spent, you know, all these different organizations that are sponsors that have dumped money into it. Everyone's going to want to see things unfold in the timelines that they've already committed to. And it's a messy situation, and you understand the reticence of people to cancel it. But I think it's the smart decision.
I mean, yeah, think of all the ad campaigns that were planned for the, I mean, everybody that has any affiliation with sports, when it comes to their marketing, that that's kind of how your campaign runs during an Olympic year. Like, if you're Wheaties or if you're Gatorade or if you're Nike, like, your summer was all about Olympic marketing. Like, hey, look at our Olympic athletes. Hey, look at, like, all the, like, that's what it was. The whole marketing plan was around the Olympics. That was the apex of the sports calendar for the summer. And now you don't have that. So now it's kind of going to be back to the drawing board. Looks like you're going to have a lot of sports taking place in the mid to late summer that are going to be just crammed in there. But you'll have some stuff to pick from.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. It's going to be a really weird situation where, like, all the sports are going to drop back onto the calendar at the exact same time.
Right.
And it's going to be tough for them to all compete with one another. But yeah, I mean, you talk about all these companies that basically fuel the sports and help to, you know, cover the costs for all these things that we watch on a regular basis through advertising dollars. They're all derailed now. And you have to wonder, like, are we going to see reruns in the commercial sense of, like, Dan and Dave for the Olympics, right? Remember that old U.S. Nike commercials?
Yeah. Yeah, and both of those guys sucked, though, it ended up being, right? Like, one of them didn't even qualify, and the other one was terrible. Like, he got there, and I think maybe got a bronze or something. Like,
It was pretty much terrible. But, it's a really complicated situation. But I'm glad, if nothing else, that the powers that be have kind of seen the folly in trying to steadfastly move forward on that path. Another major sporting institution gets taken down by the tiniest of entities.
It's funny, though, because if you think about it, for the Olympics, it's the thing we're really not thinking about right now as far as, like, when sports get back up, because a lot of the reasons why the Olympics won't happen, partly because the Olympics are in July. And obviously we all hope that by July things are, you know, we're out of our cocoons and moving about the world freely. But, like, stuff takes time, and, like, there's preparation. And I think that's what a lot of us aren't thinking about as far as, like, the Premier League getting back going. MLS, that had literally just started their season, them getting back. Like, it's not going to be like, hey, this quarantine's all going to end, June 1st or whatever. And June 2nd, we got games. Like, there's going to be, like, a little bit of a period where, like, teams are going to need to, like, get back in shape and, like, get ready to, like, play those games, and the logistics are going to have to be put in place. And, like, it's not going to be a thing where, like, you just flip a switch and we're back to playing sports.
No, I mean, seeing all these videos of players working out at home, and, you know, that's good. And it's, there are ways to help keep yourself in as best shape as you can, but you can't replicate playing in a game.
Right.
Standpoint, and you can't just snap your fingers and go and play a 90-minute Premier League game again after you've been training in your basement or in your backyard or, you know, wherever you can find space to do so. And that's the hard part for these athletes. Like, I really fear that we're going to get back into these seasons eventually and we're going to see big swaths of injuries.
Yeah. I mean, you even hear about what, like, Major League Baseball are probably going to have to, like, redo their spring training.
Yeah.
Because guys aren't going to be ready for that season. Like, it's everybody's going to kind of be going through that mindset of, like, how do we get these guys back in a position where they, like, NBA, how do we get these guys back in a position where they can jump into the playoffs and start that, like, month and a half long just gauntlet after they've been, like, you know, on their Peloton for 2 months in their house? Like, it's going to be interesting to see how you get those guys back to where they can play at a high level and not, as you said, like, just hammies just exploding left and right.
Yeah, I mean, Harry Kane does that during a normal season. But, hey, if nothing else,
he'll be back, right?
I'm actually pretty pumped about the idea of this long layoff because it allows Harry Kane, Heung-Min Son, Ben Davies, all these guys who have been carrying major injuries over the last few months and have been out of action, to get them back into the equation and hopefully get us into a position where we're competing for Champions League places, for next season. So it does sound like, though, that the Premier League is going to try to squeeze this season in some way. All the teams have kind of come together and said, like, hey, we want to finish the season out and not declare it all null and void and start over again next year. When they actually get to do that now, you know, we'll wait and see. You and I were talking about before we started recording, what does that look like? When are they going to start? They've been talking about this festival football idea where they cram, like, the Premier League into, like, 3 weeks and try to play 9 games, 10 games in 3 weeks.
I can just hear the hamstrings exploding.
Literally. So I mean, we're gonna once again be in the waiting game to see when these things are gonna happen. But that's the uncertainty in the world that we live in right now. It's not just the world of sport that's affected by this, and obviously there are far more important things than what we're seeing. We covered on last week's show some of the players who've contracted the virus at this point, and that we've heard about, you know, people involved in football. Just personally, want to give a shout out to John Harkes and his father-in-law, who lives in Kettering, Ohio, just up the road from both of us. And he's actually in the hospital right now on a ventilator, suffering through the virus at the moment. And it's just, it hits close to home when it's someone that you know and someone that's involved in the sport in your town or had been. And, I think it's a bit of a wake-up call and a reality to see what type of situation we're in when you start hearing about people you know who are being deeply impacted by the disease in a way that's not just indirectly through work stoppages and things along those lines. So it's easy to get wrapped up and lost in the impact that it has on the world of sport, but it has real-world consequences that are far more serious, and it's we need to keep that in mind as we continue to bitch about not getting to watch soccer on a regular basis.
Definitely. All right, let's do something fun. Let's do our list for the week. So I came up with this one to make a very challenging list. But we all have them, like, guys that we like for the club we support, but they were not there very long. Or they haven't been there very long so far.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Favorite players with less than 40 appearances for your team. So, that was the mandate. I kind of tweaked it a little bit with mine because I realized basically after I was done with the list that I got the metrics wrong on, like, most of them, because I was just looking at their Premier League appearances and not all the other, extra stuff.
Yeah, that's all right. I mean, we can make do with that. It made life easier for both of us by just, like, not having to double check all of our work. Did you just restrict it to Premier League? Because I know, like, both of us follow a couple teams.
Right. So I actually ended up just doing Chelsea ones because I just couldn't think of a whole lot else outside of that that I wanted to go with. And I had enough Chelsea ones where I was like, okay, I can just go ahead and make a complete Chelsea list. But yeah, no, it was open to just clubs you support.
Okay, good, because I did restrict it just to Premier League. In fact, I'm kind of predicting that you're just going to name most of Chelsea's current starting 11, given that, like, most of them, this is, like, yeah, their first year.
You would be surprised. Right. I can go ahead and tell you right now, there's only two current Chelsea players on my list.
All right, that's not all that surprising, too, given the churn and burn that Chelsea are known for in the Premier League.
Well, it made that part easy for me.
Well, let's go ahead and start with your lengthy Chelsea list. We, of course, did 10 players each here. So you're going to do 10 Chelsea. I've got a mix between the various teams that I kind of follow pretty closely. So let's get into that meat that is your Blues.
Number 10. He was technically on the book, like many Chelsea players, he's on the books for several years, physically in a Chelsea uniform for a very limited part of that. Marco Marin.
Ooh.
He didn't do a whole lot for Chelsea, but I just really liked him as a player. I thought he was a good talent. I was excited when they brought him in. I liked what I saw from him. I thought he didn't get a fair shake. As was the case for a lot of guys there in the 2000s that were winger/midfielder guys, like there was a surplus of you on the roster at all times. So it was just very hard to get minutes. And so he didn't get very many of them. He only scored, I think, one league goal out of six league appearances. 2012 to 2016. Six Premier League appearances. Marco Marin.
I remember him. He was a crafty little creative player.
Yep.
And you're right. Like, he was facing off against a bunch of really, I don't know, Chelsea are known for buying wingers in bulk. But, I mean, he's having to deal with Eden Hazard, Florent Malouda to a certain extent, right? Like, these are, you know.
Yeah. Then Pedro gets brought in. There was a lot of guys put in that mix, and he was not one of the only ones to get burned, and he isn't even the only one on the list, on my list that's part of that fate. Number nine, another player, similar situation. He made 13 league appearances. I was always a big fan of his. Was really a fan of his after the 2014 World Cup, where he kind of burst onto the scene. Brought in 2015 to Chelsea, but then was continually loaned out. May actually still be technically on loan. I don't know. He's been on loan for like multiple years. Juan Cuadrado.
Ooh, that was a good one.
I think most people completely forget that he was technically a Chelsea player and actually on the books from 2015 to 2017 is what I believe he was technically on the books for.
Yeah, I mean, great player. He's gone back to Italy and continued to be a really solid contributor over there. So that's one of those ones where you kind of scratch your head a bit when they let him go. Obviously, he didn't necessarily show really well for Chelsea during his time there.
No.
But too, he was competing with an absolute, like, quiver full of amazing wide attackers.
Yep. Number eight, I had to at least have one backup keeper that was around and did well and was likable. And I went with Begovic. Begovic, 2015, 2017. So therefore, what was that? Oh, he was there for one title, I guess. Mm-hmm. But like, just like a very nice, like, likable guy. Partially because he's Canadian, despite the fact that he plays, I believe, for like Herzegovina or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just really likable dude. He's a big NFL fan. And he has a sports podcast that's mainly about American sports. That's also interesting.
That's super weird.
Didn't yeah. Tom Brady super fan, Asmir Begovic.
Now, Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Super yeah, fan. He's going to have to buy the gear now.
Weird. Remains super weird.
Number seven. Again, he did very little for the club. Was there between, loaned out a lot on the books from 2011 to 2014. No Premier League goals for Chelsea. Romelu Lukaku never scored a Premier League goal for the Blues. Scored, you know, cup goals and other things like that. But was kind of always that next big thing. Kind of he was the Tammy Abrams of the 2000s, but he actually got to play.
Yeah.
Occasionally.
Yeah.
Until Mourinho showed up, and then he didn't.
Yeah, it's weird. He was like the next Didier Drogba.
Yeah. Everyone was always trying to compare him to, like, he was baby Drogba. He was the next Drogba. Never really got to see the field much. He also mainly is on this list because I got to actually interview him for a minute in 2013 when he was playing in Indianapolis against Inter Milan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you break for protocol and take a selfie with him as well?
No, just Oscar.
All right.
Number six, had to do it, Mo Salah. I mean, you remember, I was so excited when Chelsea brought him in.
Yeah. He made
very little impact. Yeah. 13 league appearances, scored 2 goals, one versus Arsenal, so that counts as double. 2014 to 2016 he was technically on the books for Chelsea all the way up to 2016, which is kind of wild to think about. I don't want to like do the whole like, oh, I knew this guy was going to be good, but like he was just a super, everything you like about him now, it was there then. Like he was just this like smiling, fun loving dude that was just had great pace and just played with that just thrill. And yeah, loved him.
How many of these Chelsea players just could never get enough run of games to actually get their feet underneath them? Like that sometimes blows my mind about that club.
Yeah, I would say most of the guys on my list are that guy, and I left off a lot. I don't have Kevin De Bruyne on this list, but he's I mean, if you talk about, you know what? Because I was like. When he was with Chelsea, I was like, not totally, wow, this guy's awesome. I hope he gets the gig. He was just like, oh, yeah, one of like the 30 dudes we have for midfield options signed.
You fool.
Hey, you can't get them all right. Number five, a current player, Christian Pulisic, goes without saying why he is a favorite. He has scored 5 goals in 16 league appearances so far. Hopefully more to come from, I don't know. He almost killed himself doing a TikTok video.
I know. Can't imagine, the powers that be within the Chelsea.
Like, oh no.
Enjoyed watching that.
Getting
as well.
Back.
The thing that really blows my mind about that is he still posted it like that. Like you can decide not to post it.
You could just not post. I don't know. I think that showed that personality does exist within him. So that's good.
Oh, nice.
I would say the verdict was still out on that one. Next, number four, Demba Ba. Didn't do a lot. 33 league appearances between 2013 and 2014. Obviously, some memorable moments. Two great goals. There's obviously Stevie G slipping and him scoring against Liverpool to effectively kill their title hopes. Again, a match that Mo Salah played in. And then the other one, we won I forget if it was the FA Cup. I want to say it was an FA Cup replay. We won against United on an amazing ball by him where it was played up top and he just dove forward and stuck his foot out to just kind of get it in the right direction and put it on frame past I'm guessing Romero or something like that. And yeah, didn't do much. Always loved Demba Ba because, I mean, how can you not?
He seemed like one of those buys for Chelsea where they bought him simply so that no one else could have him.
Yeah. I think they were just tired of him scoring. Remember that, like, wonder goal he had against when he was with Newcastle against Chelsea?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I think they were just tired of him just causing problems. So they're like, all right, we'll just bring him on in. We need some depth. That was when it was like Drogba was heading out. Costa hadn't shown up yet.
Lukaku wasn't being trusted to get minutes.
Lukaku wasn't seeing the light of day. Yeah. Number three, Callum Hudson-Odoi. Current player. I put him ahead of Pulisic simply because he's like Chelsea born and bred.
Mm-hmm.
There's obviously the famous picture of him as a ball kid with Samuel Eto'o after Eto'o scores this goal against, I think it was when he had the hat trick against United. But I mean, a kid that's been in the fold for years, and we knew he was kind of coming through the ranks. So much promise, so much hope for him. So he's number three. Number two, your favorite, Loic Remy.
Named my second daughter after him.
Yeah, you did. So yeah, obviously, he would be up there on your list too, as far as great Chelsea players.
To be fair, I didn't rate him at all.
I would hope so. He scored 8 league goals ever for Chelsea. If you go back, I would say at least 6 of them during the season, Mourinho's second stint when we won the title. He was responsible for, like, I think I calculated like 8 to 10 points in the table from goals that he scored.
Yeah,
and he only scored 8 goals ever for us in the league. So it didn't play much, came off the bench a lot, but was impactful when he did. My number one of my favorite Chelsea players of all time, only played with Chelsea for 1 season. 31 appearances, 2 goals, Raul Morales. I love the guy. Tatted to the rafters. Mohawk. You know, tough playing midfielder. Absolutely adored the guy. Was part of, obviously, the Champions League final team that sealed the deal for us in 2012. So he'll always be remembered for that. He had some big moments there. In fact, some of his biggest moments came against the round we had against Benfica, the club he had just come from, playing very well against them. I don't know. Always loved the guy. Always a huge fan of him. 31 league appearances. Raul Morales, my number one.
Man, well, I feel bad because I didn't actually rank mine simply because, too, like I went across a couple different teams and I felt like it'd be difficult to actually do that, but I did go through and pick 10 players out. Just to give you a heads up, Spurs feature heavily in this one, obviously, mm-hmm. but also have some picks from Real Madrid, which is the Spanish team that I followed for a long time. I have a couple from the Crew, because I've been a lifelong Crew fan, at least as long as the club's been around. And then a couple from SCC, too, because I feel like we need to pay a little bit of a homage to our hometown club. So let's kick mine off and start with Spurs. I, too, only picked 2 players currently on the squad. It almost feels like you're cheating a little bit by doing that type of thing, but...
Sure. Because it's like they're going to surpass that 40.
Oh, for sure. But I'm going to squeeze them in while we still can. Number one on my list, hands down, I fall in love with him immediately, is Steven Bergwijn, who just arrived in January.
Okay.
I really love not just his energy and his kind of enthusiasm for the game, But he's really technical and has proven to be really versatile so far. And he's bedded into the team like immediately. And I feel like with Spurs, we've been in this mode, especially under Pochettino, where it takes a while for our new signings to actually find their legs or even get opportunities. And Mourinho tossed Bergwijn straight into the fire, and he really stepped up at a time where the club needed him to. Predictably, he got injured. Who knows if by the time the coronavirus thing is washed over, if he'll be able to rejoin the team at that point. I'm hoping he will. But I've been a huge fan of his so far, and I'm going to make a prediction in saying he will be the next number and name I put on the back of a Spurs shirt when I finally pony up for a new kit. Not entirely nice for the Kits Out Challenge, but so Bergwijn is number one on my list. The other player that's currently on the team is an academy player. I felt like I just kind of had to do that. And that's Oliver Skip. He's the young up and coming midfielder, kind of in the mold of a Tom Carroll, who's another player who I could have potentially included on this list, who was under 40 caps. But Skip seems like a level above there, and really feels like the next type of homegrown player that we'll really have an opportunity to do. I love his consistency, hardly ever turns the ball over. And you got to show some love for the academy products. These next three players, or next two players, at least from a Spurs perspective, are guys who are no longer with the team. One's actually retired at this point too. And let's start with that one. Clint Dempsey had that one season with Spurs before he moved on to Seattle and his eventual retirement there, and a career cut shorter than what he would have liked. I also have to kind of give him a nod here too, because this is the only player on the list that I've actually played against and had an opportunity to test my mettle against. And,
how'd it go?
Truly one of the greatest men's national team players ever. And he never quite showed that same swagger that he had at Fulham while he's with Spurs. But he did kind of pop up at big moments for us when we really needed him to. So hats off to Deuce for his one-year stint in Lily White.
Do you think he could have hung out in the Premier League longer if he wanted to?
I think too, like, you remember when Spurs signed him, Liverpool was the other club that was really chasing a signature at the time. And I remember being really excited that we beat him to it, beat them to a signature. But two, we already had a player that pretty much played in the exact same type of role with the team at that point. So it never really seemed like it was a good fit for him, at least as far as squads go. But I'm almost certain that if he'd gone to like a smaller club, you know, moved up a little bit from Fulham, but gone somewhere like in Everton, which, you know, where the other player the Spurs had at that time, Sigurdsson, eventually ended up. Yeah, I think he probably would have extended his career, you know, a bit longer, at least as far as England's concerned. But he did have a decent one-year spell there for Spurs. And, hey, we haven't had many Americans suit up in Lily White, so that was fun to watch.
You got to enjoy it when it happens.
That's right. The last Spurs player that I had on the list is one that most listeners probably won't be terribly familiar with, but Lewis Holtby. He was a half German, half English kid that made his way over to Spurs from the Bundesliga. On his day was absolutely fantastic, but had a lot of down days while he was with Spurs. And the thing that really kind of made him endearing on top of a never ending engine when he did get in the field was he just like seemed like one of the most likable pro footballers that I've ever seen. Like anytime Spurs did some like cushy, safe, kind of fun content on their social channels that involved Holtby, I would 100% watch it because he would be super into it. Like I remember they had a tennis ball juggling competition and he was mad trying to win it. Like he was super concerned about not winning this tennis ball juggling competition. And, you know, if you got a guy who's going to be showing that much passion for winning something like that, I'm going to get on board with that. But he just never really found his feet in a Spurs shirt.
Pop quiz, where is Lewis Holtby now? I just looked it up. It's crazy. I did not see this one coming.
Now that you said it's crazy, I'm going to say he's not in Germany any longer.
So he had been in Germany up until this season.
And now, what is he playing? Like the A-League in Australia or something?
Worse. Blackburn Rovers.
Oh, man. That is worse. He's going to get a chicken thrown at him here shortly, most likely.
Nice. All right, who you got next?
So now I'm going to move over. We'll stay on the European side of the ocean, and I'm going to Real Madrid. This is a player that you'll probably be very familiar with, and just barely spent any time here with Madrid. Was a bit past his prime, but he remains one of my all-time favorite players, Michael Essien. Only had about 15 appearances for Real Madrid.
Love that.
Kind of one of those insurance buys, like a big name they could sell some shirts with in Africa, but would also, you know, provide some metal and some steel in the midfield. He remains, like, hands down, not only one of my favorite players, but he's one of the greatest two-way players of the more modern generation of midfielders out there. I know he had a terrific spell at Chelsea, and I hated liking him so much while he was at Chelsea. Simply because he was so damn good. But the other thing I love this about him more than anything is the dude can nap anywhere. And like, if you watch any behind the scenes stuff, they would always show him napping. Like he would have like 5 minutes before he had to go and do like a photo shoot thing. And they'd like pan over and Essien would be asleep, like on like sitting up in a chair. And I as someone who loves a good nap, I just feel like we're a little bit soulmates in that respect.
He was always one of my favorites. All right, hey, quick question. Obviously, Essien was a Madrid player, but as far as players that played for Chelsea and then also played for one of your clubs, is it Essien tops that list? William Gallus, where does he fit in there?
William Gallus did the trio of London clubs, too. He also
didn't he? He went to Arsenal, too.
So I always felt very conflicted liking William Gallus. He's another one of those guys that just – he gave his all on the field. He, like, bled for whatever team he was playing for. But it always irked me a little bit. Like, he always seemed like he was a bit of an undercover agent for both of those clubs once he had joined Spurs.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah, so Essien definitely sits at the top, at least as far as people who cross the divide from Chelsea. The other Real Madrid player that I liked, I feel like he's probably one of the most underrated forwards of the last 10 or so years, Klaas-Jan Huntelaar, who's been fantastic in, for a number of clubs since he's left Madrid. He only found, like, I think it was like 25 appearances total for them. He signed up in the middle of the Galactico era when it's just impossible to even get playing time. And he could never really get his feet underneath him, but he's super versatile. He's banged in some absolutely incredible goals. Most of the time in matches that like it was too late. Like I think a couple years ago he had one for Werder Bremen that was an absolute rocket, but they're already down like 6-0, in the two-legged, side of things in Europe. So, really liked him. Was kind of sad he didn't pan out in Madrid. But glad to see he had a good career after leaving Los Blancos.
He was one of those players. Huntelaar is one of those guys I've been just sitting around waiting, expecting over the last like 4 years that at some point in a January window, like an Arsenal or a Chelsea that we needed that extra guy up top, just went and just threw cash at that situation.
Yeah, I'm
legit. Got Huntelaar for
I'm shocked he never made his way to the Premier League. Let's move over stateside. I split up my last four between the Crew and FCC. You know, both these clubs, the Crew, I probably could have listed 10 out on my own. I feel like watching this club for so long, I know a lot of these players, but I picked out two that I kind of had some sentimental ties to. The first one only made 17 appearances for the Crew. And I think most people kind of remember him more for what he did for his national team more than what he actually did for Columbus. But that's Giancarlo Gonzalez, the Costa Rican center back, made a big move to Italy immediately after the World Cup. Literally, like he made a move to MLS for the Crew, played 17 games, went off to the World Cup, And then we never saw him again. And but he was just an amazingly consistent performer in the back. Great vision on both sides of the ball. Could read passing lanes really well and distributed really well. And that's what earned him his move, at least in part, over to Italy after the World Cup. Because he was just a really consistent center back and something you really didn't see that level of quality of in Major League Soccer that often. The other crew player that I threw on there was someone who was with the team for a while, but, you know, because of the nature of position, never really got in. Matt Lampson, you know, it was a perpetual reserve keeper, not necessarily great, but solid. But he's just he's a truly amazing human being. If you've had a chance ever to talk to Matt, he's a great guy, has all the time in the world for their supporters. And he's also mega involved in the community, has a charity of his own, is always out doing community events. And, you know, seeing him move off to several other teams at this point, Chicago, Minnesota, has been a little bit difficult to swallow. I think, isn't he back with the crew?
He's back. He's back. Yeah.
Now. So maybe he'll get a few more appearances. I can't imagine he'll break the 40 threshold. But a really good guy and you know, someone you like to have a player like that in your locker room, if nothing else.
Isn't his dad like a ref?
Yeah, I think so.
Because I want to say his dad refs like at the collegiate and semi-pro level. I think he actually may or may not have reffed like a Cincinnati Saints game once. And like after the fact, someone was like, oh yeah, that was Lampson's dad was the ref. I was like, what?
Wait a minute. Okay, what? Yeah, absolutely. So there's two crew players for you. I'll wrap it up with a couple FC Cincinnati players. Both of these players coming actually from the USL era. I think we could have easily picked an MLS player or two, given that like none of them have 40 appearances. But these two guys, I feel like, really deserve it. One on the plaudits of their play, Richie Ryan. I'm mega disappointed that his injury kind of robbed him of getting consistent minutes for FCC during that 2018 season. But just he's a metronome in the midfield, and you know I feel like he probably earned a shot at MLS, but the injury has really kind of prevented him from getting that opportunity. But a good player, great guy, the type of leader you want on your squad as well. And then the last one is actually a friend and someone that I know you know as well, and that's Paul Nicholson, English midfielder slash defender, extremely versatile, and not just versatile, but 100% willing to go play wherever you asked him to. Like as long as he was getting on the pitch, he did not care. Played center back for a little bit for FCC during the first two seasons, too, when they were running through some injury issues. But he's hands down one of the most humble players I've ever met in my entire life. He's literally the type of guy that felt like he didn't deserve to be there the entire time, but didn't play with that type of mentality. Like he went out and played with a nice, you know, he could put in a stiff tackle if he needed him to. He could set up a nice pass if he needed him to. And I just loved him as a guy. I think he's a great dude overall, and was really glad to get to know him during the two seasons that he spent with FCC. Of course, he's still in town. He's coaching at Cincinnati.
Still part of the community.
Yeah, in USL League Two. So glad to see he's continuing his soccer career forward and sticking around in the tri-state, if nothing else.
Makes the odd appearance at Gotham soccer matches. Playing in those as well, so
probably a decent pickup here and there.
Yeah, so a solid acquisition there. Him and Corbin Bone.
Yeah.
I almost picked Nas Al-Badawi.
Mm-hmm.
Just a guy that like he was such a great player, and then they brought him in. He has a really good 2018. But obviously with the size of like the season, like he only made 27 appearances in that 2018 season. Mm-hmm. And then he gets on the MLS roster, makes one appearance, and then is ultimately loaned out. It was one of those rough, that was a frustrating situation where I was like, there's all these injuries. Everyone's going down in this midfield. And you just still never saw him getting really any opportunity. And then he gets loaned out. And then, you know, obviously that kind of ends it for him in Cincinnati. But a guy that I was super excited about him showing up and then, you know, obviously played really well. I think scored 11 goals in 2018 from as a midfielder.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Matt was a great player. I actually considered him for my list, too. We did put the same question out to our listeners and did get a couple really good responses back. So I want to read through some of these because I think they're worth pointing out. Kevin Wallace and your brother, Josh, both lobbed up Landon Donovan during his time at Everton. He had two short stints with them during MLS off seasons where he was incredibly effective. I think a lot of us American fans really wanted to see him make the move permanently over to Liverpool to see him suit up for the blue side of the town. Just kind of almost disappointing that he didn't make the move over there. And I totally get that. If I were an Everton fan, I would do that too. Your brother Josh also lobbed in Umar Nuyase at Everton. And then,
yeah, no, he liked him so much he bought a Nyasa jersey. Ooh. I know he bought a Nyasa jersey.
I probably one of like three in the entire world, yeah. Like parents and your brother. and then the other player that Josh named, I literally like I had to double check it because I thought it was wrong. Brian McBride had an eight match loan stint at Everton, had three goals. And that literally helped him to land a spot with Fulham where he went on to become a club legend.
Yeah, I was actually, when I saw that, I was slightly confused. I was like, wait a minute, is he talking about like when McBride was with the Chicago Fire? Which
that's what I thought too.
So I was like, oh, maybe it's that. And then I was like, nah, that was like 60 appearances or whatever. So I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that was a weird one there. Our buddy Fletcher Sharp from up in Detroit, he threw out one that you included on your list, Mo Salah. Mm-hmm. That's a good one. Mike Miller, he had literally one of my all-time favorite players, not necessarily because of how he played or what he did on the pitch, but because he's just goofy and awesome. Peter Crouch had a less than 40-match stint at Southampton. So there's a good one there, one of the, like, 50 clubs that Mr. Longlegs played for over the years. It wouldn't be a podcast without Gage Magoto offering up an opinion.
He had a good one. I liked him.
Romain Gall for the Columbus Crew. They picked him up. He'd been playing internationally. I can't remember where he'd been prior to that point. But was a youth national team kind of standout. And I think all of us who were Crew fans at that time were really excited about Gall joining the team. And it never really worked out for him. And he's since moved on back to Europe and done fairly well for himself.
Yeah, I think he's playing in he's playing for Malmo, I believe.
Yeah, which not a bad place to be. Probably getting some Champions League European football under his belt. Adam Maloney, your one-time stand-in here on the podcast when you were going through some health issues. He had an easy one. He called it a no-brainer, Zlatan at Manchester United. You know, had an incredible impact that was also cut short by injury as well. But it was fun watching him there for a while. And then Bob Bromberg, he offered up two teams, Federico Fazio, the big Italian center back, or actually Argentinian center back, that played for Spurs. And then, Patty Barrett, who's one of the most lovable dudes, just straight up hilarious guy, great teammate to have around. Who's now playing over for Indy 11, which it's good to see him not too far away from us as well. So great contributions from our listeners tonight. Thanks to everyone who took the time to do that. And that brings us to the end of this week's show, right around the hour mark. So I'm sure everyone will be pretty pleased about that. As always, if you want to get a hold of Jeremy, he's at Jeremy Lance on Twitter. I'm at Wrong Side of Pond. We're going to continue doing these. We'll be doing more top 10s. If you have any suggestions, we're all ears. Mostly because we don't want to do the work to come up with a list on our own.
Hey, six more of these maybe, right?
Yeah, give us six.
So we need them.
So stay safe out there. Make sure you're washing your hands. Social distance yourself. Please don't go play and pick up games. I get it. I'm on like the longest spell of not playing soccer outside of injury in my entire life. And I'm going crazy, and beating up on my kids in soccer is not as fun as I would like for it to be, but do it for everyone else. So that way we can all get back to watching soccer and hanging out in pubs together in the very near future.
Sounds good. I cannot wait.
Yeah. Virtual beers just aren't as fun.
I mean, they drink pretty good, but you know, yeah, that could be a lot better if there was actually people around you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not my daughter asking me if I was drinking coffee.
Sure.
Like, no, coffee. This is beer. And she was like, can I have some? I was like, I would literally go to jail if I give you this.
Yeah. Yeah. Not the best drinking partners.
By the way, her reply to that was, there's no police officers around. Oh, okay. You're getting in trouble.
Probably a bad sign. And on that note, we'll log off.
Alrighty, folks.
See you soon.
Bye. Stretch out your legs, let me make you fall. Drive you insane, drive you up the wall. Staring at your dome piece, very strong. Stronger than pride, stronger than Teflon. Take you on the Ave and you buy me links. Now I want a pound of until it stinks. You could be my mama and I'll be your boy. Original road boy, never am I coy. You could be a shorty in my ill convoy. Not to come across as a thug or a hood. What? But hun, you got the goods like Madeline Wood. By the way, my name's Malik.